Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. What's going on, everybody? Jason Cutter here. Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show live. So coming at you, it's Thursday morning, December 3rd. It's 8 a.m. here, Pacific time, 11 a.m. Eastern. Hopefully everyone's doing well. Hopefully everyone had a nice Thanksgiving holiday. For most people, I would guess it was very quiet. It was much different than your normal Thanksgiving weekend, Thanksgiving holiday. On one side, it could be kind of lonely. You don't have a lot of family. You don't have a lot of things going on. On the other side, it could be absent all of the drama that happens around the holidays. So hopefully that was easier. My special guest today, Rob, is on his way. So I thought I would chat with you guys and take this time to talk a bit about this end of the year push. Now, I did an episode on the podcast about this recently, where this is an interesting time of year for people in sales and in business. And there's two ways to go about it, and neither is right or wrong. There's no right or wrong about an approach. It's really just how it fits into your goals and your strategies. So one thing that happens this time of year is that people get kind of in the holiday spirit, and they get kind of detached from working hard. They don't want to work hard. They want to look at the holidays, or they're dealing with stress, or they're dealing with family. They're dealing with all kinds of things. And or it just feels like towards the end of the year, I need a break. And you know, there's all these distractions, all these things going on, and all these excuses for why not to work harder just because of everything going on. And in my opinion, that's also really okay. If you're in sales, you're in business, if you're in a leadership role, then you're usually driving really, really hard, either for a week, weekly goals, monthly goals, quarterly goals, whatever that looks like. You're always driving really, really hard. If you're in sales and you have a performance metric. And what doesn't happen for most people in their life is that we don't get an off season. So if you look at things like professional athletes, they have an off season. Even, let's say, actors and actresses and performers, they usually have an off season, right? So, you know, sports team plays, they have their season. Even the ones who make it in the playoffs, they have the extension of their season, and then they have an off season. They have a time to recover. They have time to rest, to regroup. When you're in sales, you don't really have that off season. It's really tough to justify that, because if you're not working, if you're not pushing hard, you're not making money. And I think one of the biggest things is to give yourself that break when you think you should, but be intentional about it. And make that a focus of your time, which is, okay, I'm going to take this time off. I'm going to take these 2 weeks. I'm going to slow down or ramp down these 4 weeks at the end of the year, whatever it is for you. Some people do that in the summer so they can take some time off during the summer. And I think that's really important if you're pushing hard to give yourself that recovery, because at some point you're just going to tire out or burn out. I think burnout is a completely different topic. That's usually at the intersection of doing something you don't want to do or that isn't in total alignment with you, and pushing too hard to go after something maybe that you don't necessarily want. And so that's where burnout can happen. But it can also happen just where you're just grinding and working hard and just running at a high pace all the time without that recovery. And weekends aren't enough recovery for most people. They just, you know, you need to think about it and then plan. So having a down season, having an off season, having some downtime for especially a couple of weeks towards the end of the year, depending on what your goals are, depending on where you're at with your goals, I think that's critical. I think that's important to keep that in mind. Now, to get to that point where you can justify that and, let's say, afford it and or deserve it, right, depending on which word you want to use, the key is that you've got to be able to hit your goals and do well the other times, right? So one of the things, if we look at sports, they're playing at a high level. They're playing lots of games. They're working really hard for months and months and months. Let's say it's even 9 or 10 months. They're working really hard. And what you see on the field or on the court is only part of it, right? That there's also practice and there's watching game footage and all those things that, you know, I've talked about in the past that relates to sales. The thing is that they're pushing really hard and then they're taking that off season. if you're in sales, are you hitting your numbers? Are you pushing really hard? Are you actually working really hard, or are you just filling in your time and you know, having some level of activity and then thinking that you need a break? Did you hit your goals? And I think one of the biggest things that you can do, the best things, is to focus on hitting your goal, hitting your annual goal. If you can do that in the first 9 months, then the last 3 months is either a bonus time or a time to slow down, reflect, or to take a break and then start the momentum for the next period, right? Your next 9 months. And it doesn't have to be a calendar year, right? There's always this focus on calendar years, but it might be something different for you. Your cycles might be different. And so I think that's important on one side. Now, the other thing is that at this time of year, is for me, which is to push harder, to do more. You know, a lot of the thoughts is that, you know, customers are taking time off, people are taking time off, nobody wants to do business, nobody wants to do anything. And I disagree. I think sometimes it's a numbers game. You might have to do more outreach, you might have to do more efforts to find those people and to connect. But it's definitely a time to work hard if you want to reach those goals and you want to keep pushing yourself. Then I think you can. And some of it might be planting seeds. Some of it might be actually closing new business. Whatever that is, at the other end of the spectrum is working hard and finishing the year strong and just pushing through. And then maybe your down season is in January. Maybe that's when you're going to take some time off. Now, I say this because what happens a lot and what I hear a lot from salespeople, from leaders, from businesses, and I've heard this forever, is that, you know, it's the holidays and you can't close deals, right? Or it's this holiday and you can't close deals. The weather's bad, you can't close deals. Oh, there's the election, you can't close deals. Like, there's all these reasons why somebody thinks they can't be successful. And for me, it's a mindset issue, right? It's a mindset where somebody says, I can't do X because of X. Because of this, I can't do that. And if you want a great example of this, I don't have the link here with me, but if you search Victor Antonio, and I think if you just Googled Victor Antonio, who's a sales coach and trainer, he's a brilliant guy. And then I think it's wedding dresses or just dresses, and you search for that. He talks about when he got into a sales role and he was selling dresses, and everyone around him, everyone at the company said, you can't sell dresses in December. It's just, you don't sell dresses in December. I think it might've been wedding dresses. And he's like, that doesn't make sense. Why not? And he didn't buy into that excuse. He didn't buy into that mindset. And so he just said, why not? I could sell them anyway. And then he absolutely crushed it. And he went out there and he closed lots of deals. He sold lots of dresses and actually had a fantastic December and proved to himself and others that that seasonality excuse, I'll say, is something that it's a choice whether you believe it or not. And I don't want people to use that as the reason why they're not working in December. And again, that's why I started with, you know, if you want to be intentional about some time off, that's fantastic. I totally agree. I think it's good to do a reset, reevaluate, look at where you're at, where you're going. Are you on the right path, right? Especially in a year like this, 2020, which has been a fascinating year for pretty much everybody. Some people doing really well, some people having to pivot, which is the word of the year. Some people shifting what they're doing, some people going backwards and then maybe moving forwards again. Whatever that is, maybe this is a great time to reflect and go, okay, what worked? What didn't work? What could I do different next time? What do I want to do? Where do I want to go because of this situation right now and with the timing? What do I want to maybe focus on in the next year? And then on the other side, which is just to push harder right now for some people. Some people, you're sprinting to the end and get to that point where you know you've left it all in the field at the end of the year. Again, or the other end is that you need a break. And I think that's very important to not buy into that excuse. I mean, I used to see that a lot when my first sales job, my first, what I call my first real job that I had in a business and sales environment was in the mortgage business. And so I started in August, and when December came around, November, December, I was told nobody buys houses. Nobody buys houses. Nobody does anything. Nobody's selling houses around Christmas and December. It's just not what happens. And I thought, why is that? Like, I think people are always doing transactions. People are always going to sell. People are always looking to buy. I mean, just because there's a holiday doesn't mean that everything stops. Now, It means most people are going to stop. People who need to sell, maybe it's because they got a job relocation or there's been something that happened in the family. Maybe they have to sell. Maybe it's financial issues. There's always something going on. There's always transactions. Things don't just stop in the U.S. for a holiday, like across the board. Like everybody doesn't just stop. So it's a mindset choice. Now, what happens? It might mean that you have to do more effort, might mean you have to reach out to more people, have more conversations, have more people in the pipeline that you're moving forward, but it doesn't mean you can't do any transaction. And so one of the things that I used to talk to people, especially starting in November, is I would talk to somebody who's looking at potentially buying a home. They're currently renting, they're in an apartment, they want to buy a house. I remember this one couple, it was a husband, wife, and they had two young kids and they just wanted to get into a house. And I said, okay, this is great. Let's get you qualified for a loan and then let's get you out there. I have a realtor you can work with. We have enough time. Let's make this happen before Christmas. And they said, well, we don't want to do that. It's the holidays. We have a lot going on and, you know, we don't want to move and, you know, we're not sure if we can find anything in that time frame. And then I said, hey, let's do this. I want to have you think about something. So close your eyes if you want, but you don't have to. And I'm sitting there face to face and most people aren't going to close their eyes because it seems kind of weird, especially thinking, you know, I'm what, 27 at the time. So I'm kind of younger and it's like, okay, who's this guy? And now what is he going to do with our eyes closed? And I'm like, hey, imagine this. It is Christmas morning. You wake up, you and your family, the two kids come downstairs and see your Christmas tree with presents underneath it in your new house, in your living room, Christmas morning. And that's how your Christmas morning starts. What would that be like? And they're like, that would be amazing. And I said, okay, well, let's make that happen and let's do what we can to see if we can accomplish that in the time that we have. And when you connect it to that and there's a reason for it, then it changes. And for me, I just didn't buy into, okay, it's December. It's a slow time for that. I also worked with a lot of realtors and they always thought that the summer was really slow. Nobody buys houses in summer. Now, the stats show that less people buy and sell houses in the summertime. Most people are distracted. But what I also found is that it became a self-fulfilling prophecy for a lot of people who there were realtors who said, nobody buys in the summer, so I'm just going to take the summer off, right? I'm going to go out on the lake or I'm going to hang out. I'm going to go on vacation. And so if you're working less, you're going to do less sales, right? Less transactions, have less deals, have less things going on in your pipeline, which is then going to justify, hey, there's no reason to work in the summer because I don't close that many deals in the summer. Well, it's about the effort that you're putting in. And so just be careful with that self-fulfilling prophecy. Looks like Nishant, the love doctor here watching live. Hey, appreciate that. He says that he agrees and says that regular burnout here. Burnouter here. And I've gotten to know Nishant. And I think one of the things is, you know, there's the burnout of not having, you know, the right direction going on, especially when you're younger, like Nishant is, and it's a function of what are you focusing on? What are you doing? And then where do you want to go with things? And I know for him, he has a lot of things going on and a lot of ideas and a lot of projects. And sometimes that can lead to burnout because going in many different directions, sometimes that can fire some people up. Sometimes they thrive off lots of projects. Sometimes they thrive off of less projects. And so I think that's always something to be conscious of. And then again, whether it's, you know, just exertion and you're just going really hard, or that you are just, you know, going in the wrong direction, that break, like I said, that seasonality break, just one thing before I move on, just focus on what your mindset is with that down period. Again, don't let yourself buy into excuses, especially that you've gotten from other people's limiting beliefs about what you can and can't do in any season of the year, any season of your career, in business, in sales, right? Just because someone says, oh, nobody's doing anything in December, don't buy into that. But again, make this what you want. Just don't use that as your excuse. Joe Latshaw, thanks for the advice, man. You are welcome. Hopefully this helps. And again, it's really being intentional. It's really about what you want to create. And I think one of the things that in the US that we don't do very well on this topic before I move on is that in other countries, they force sabbaticals. They require you to take lots of vacation time and then, you know, take that time off and reset. And that reset is really helpful. And in America, we don't. So in America, it's really about working harder. And maybe you get a couple weeks of vacation. If you're in sales, you probably might have some vacation, but you don't want to use it because you know that if you're not there, then you're not making money. And so I think that's a really tough cycle. So just be intentional, control it. And again, just if you focus on, I have my year-long goal, if I can hit that in the first 9 months, if I can hit that in three quarters, then that final quarter is either a bonus or it's a recovery, regroup, plan it, your mission, take your lessons learned and go into the next year. Either way, Raza Khan, like from Germany, glad that you're here. Thanks for joining. All right. So, looks like Rob is not on his way yet. So I wanted to take the rest of this time here and I wanted to share something that comes up a lot. And people ask me, my background and my experience is in inside call centers. So it's in, telephone call centers where, we're doing mostly inbound telephone calls and selling some kind of service. So it's been financial debt relief services, and it's about helping people in some situation, but it's been all over the telephone and it's been primarily inbound. So it's about doing marketing, creating marketing that would drive inbound phone calls or inbound inquiries through a website or things like that. And so I think that's you know, important to set the stage, which is that's the background I came from. Then now it's been 2 years. It's actually a 2 year anniversary this week of me starting my consulting company. And in this journey that I've had in consulting, one of the things is I've been working with a lot of different industries, right? So remember, I was in inside telephone sales, direct to consumer financial services and debt relief. And then over the course of the last 2 years, my clients have had a wide range. One of my first clients was a call center that was selling or helping people enroll in Direct Energy. And I actually went overseas to work with that call center. And then the next client I had was actually SaaS, software as a service, B2B, which up to that point, I hadn't fully sold it. I'd done a little bit with experimenting and developing some teams around it, but not fully. And it was selling, you know, software as a service, a platform to businesses, to business owners. And I've worked with retail furniture stores. I worked with product and brand merchandising companies, commercial debt collection companies. And every time what comes up is people generally ask, like, hey, what do you know about selling X, Y, and Z? Like, tell me what you know. Have you ever sold this, right? Fill in the blank, whatever it is. And my answer is always the same, which is no, but sales is sales. And the fundamentals are the same. To me, it's always the same basic framework that you then apply, right? It's kind of, to me, it's similar to, let's say, cooking or baking, where there's some key ingredients, and there is a focus on this ingredients or this process, right? Like you need these things. And then once you have these things, what you put in and the amounts or the timing, maybe that's up to you, but here's these fundamentals. I might butcher this, but I think one of the things for cooking, especially high-level cooking, you want a nice balanced meal or a nice balanced dish, salt, fat, heat, and acid. So you need those four things. If you have those four things, it's a perfectly balanced dish that has those four elements. So we might call those the fundamentals. Now, for me, what I found is that sales has that same thing. So no matter what you're selling, no matter what you're doing and how you're going about it, there's some sales, what I call the sales success fundamentals. And if you've listened to my podcast, if you've seen videos, if you've seen stuff that I've done, I talk about this a lot, which is these sales success fundamentals and what they are. So what I wanted to do here is cover these and give you this framework, which I think is important. And again, I honestly, truly feel this applies to any sales process, to anything being sold that you're selling that requires or includes some type of consultative decision-making process where there is a couple of factors. One is that not every person wins. So not everyone is qualified. If you talk to 10 people, it doesn't mean that all 10 of those people will be the perfect fit, will be somebody that should be a client. You might want them to be a client, but if you're honest about it and you're reflective and you look back at it, you know that if you enrolled all of them, some of them would be terrible clients. They would be unhappy. It wouldn't actually help them, or they would just be a pain in the butt from a customer satisfaction, customer service standpoint. It just wouldn't work. So, the key is that it's got to be about having somebody who's qualified, who would be a good fit, right? And not everybody is a good fit. And that there's a consultative process and there's a decision-making process, and that you're going to determine what somebody needs and then help them find the right solution. So this framework isn't necessarily ideal if everybody wins, right? Like you're knocking on doors selling newspapers and everyone should get the newspaper, then this isn't necessary, right? This is, I'll say, overkill in that situation. If everybody wins, if it's not a consultative process, which means it's more of an order taking process, which is somebody calls up, they have a request, they want X. You're just going to fill out the paperwork. You're going to help them decide between X and Y. And that's really the extent of it. Then this is not necessary. But if your goal is to be a sales professional, if you're in a role that is designed to help people move forward and make a decision, and that's what you're focused on, and you don't want to be an order taker, right? Which is what I talk about a lot in my book, going from order taker to quota breaker. If that's not your goal, if you want to get out of that order taker mode and be a sales professional, then this framework is for you. So here's what it is. So I call it REFU, and I've been teaching this for 10 years. I created this framework and realized that this was the way to sell and apply to anything. And so I came up with this 10 years ago, and I've literally never been able to come up with anything better than REFU. Different terms just make it confusing. A different order doesn't work. It's got to be done in this order, which I'll cover at the end. But this is the framework, which is REFU. So let's look at this. So here's these five stages. And obviously, each one of these letters stands for something in particular. And I'm not going to go into super detail because it makes sense. And I have other programs about it. I've talked about it in other podcasts. But here, I just want to give you this as something to apply. And really, as I'm going through this, look at a couple of things. Is what are you doing currently in your sales conversations and your sales process? And then what could you take from this? What is missing? What could you do better? What could you do different? What could you do that would help you get more effective results? And then also the time that you're spending on these. I think that's super important. And so also keep in mind this too. A lot of times I work with people who have a very long sales cycle, right? It could be anywhere from a month, which when you come from the background that I had, which was a mostly one call close, most deals get closed within a week. You know, a month sales cycle feels like forever in that kind of framework. So maybe you have a long sales cycle, like a month, maybe it's 6 months, anything like that. Keep in mind, this framework, in my opinion, is in a conversation where you're trying to persuade someone to purchase. Now, a purchase could be the ultimate purchase where they're taking out their credit card or they're approving it and, you know, you're getting their funds and it's done, right? Like they're swiping the credit card, it's done, or they filled out an invoice and it's done. It could also be, if we look at it in really definition terms, is a sale and the purchase, the persuasion that you're going for, right? You're using authentic persuasion, you're trying to get them there. That could be just for the next appointment. That could be for the demo. That could be for the meeting that you want to have with all of the decision makers that need to be involved, right? The stakeholders who are going to be involved. And that could be the spouse. It could be the CEO, whoever that is. So keep in mind, if you take this framework, if you take REFU and the sales success fundamentals, and you apply that to any conversation where there is, you're hoping to make a sale, and that sale could be the next step in the process, then you can apply this and you should include all of these in your conversation. So let's go into them. They're really, like I said, I keep it simple. Everything I do is simple. I am a guy with a marine biology degree that happens to be really good at sales and persuasion and coaching and leadership. And so I try to keep it super simple, mostly for myself, because if it's too complicated, I'll just mess it up as well. So here we go. The first one is rapport. Obvious. got to start with rapport. Like Bob Berg says, people will do business with people that they know, like, and trust. The first one is know, like, right? We're going to talk about trust. That's the T in the ref U. That's two more steps away. But the first one is the rapport. So you got to build some level of rapport. Now, here's the thing, and I talk about this in the book and in the coaching and the training that I do. There is a way to do rapport wrong, right? This is where the authentic persuasion framework comes in, is that it's got to be authentic. It's got to be about you wanting to build rapport, wanting to get to know that other person, wanting to be engaged with that person and get to know them, not as a trick to get them to like you so that you can get your way and so that you can check this box, right? Okay, Jason said I got to build rapport, so I built rapport and now I'm moving on, right? Like, I think they like me. I said some things. They like football and I pretended like I like football. So we're good. Now we're going to move forward, right? And so that's one of those things where it's got to be authentic. It's got to be true. And if you're struggling with rapport, if you wonder how to build rapport, one of the biggest steps that I suggest is curiosity. If you're curious and if you're interested in the other person, which the basis of that is going to be the curiosity piece, if you're curious about the other person and you want to find out about the other person, that curiosity framework in your mind will be the vehicle to understanding who they are and then being interested in them. And when you're interested in someone, they will find you interesting. What's crazy, this is what's so wild, and I think it's fun, crazy in a good way, is that when you're curious about someone and when you're interested about what makes them tick or what they've done in their life or what they're doing now or what they're excited about or what their interests are, or their hobbies or their history, anything like that. When you're curious and interested and you ask questions and you actually care about the answers because you're curious and you're interested, what's fascinating is people will find you interesting and they will like you, right? Just by asking questions and being curious, somebody will say, wow, in their mind, wow, this person is really curious and interested about me. I really like them. This is great. And so the thing is that if you do that and it's coming from an authentic place, then it works really, really well. And I think that's the key, is to come at it from that framework. And then, so that is the rapport piece. And obviously the key is how much time do you spend in the rapport? That's going to be up to you. So the rapport piece for you is going to be, you know, it could be your personality type. It could be the conversation length. If you have a long sales cycle, you might need to build lots of rapport. It also is going to depend on the other person. So there's no specific time. I'm not going to say build rapport for 2 minutes and then move on and do this. Ask this question to build the right rapport. That's, some of that's just customized to you, right? So these are fundamentals. Now let's talk about empathy. And before I get into that, it looks like I'm going to bring on my main man, Mr. Dude. Rob House.
Can you hear me right now?
I got you, man.
So listen, I go on LinkedIn. I say, oh, Jason, he's doing like a show. Oh, interesting. This guy's really busy. Then I look at a text message and I see it's from you. What I'm trying to figure out is, how do I invite people to an event, have in my calendar the time for an event, but still have the event time wrong? I just don't understand how this is possible.
It happens. It happens, man. It's life. I had a networking event a couple weeks ago. I did the same thing. I had three reminders in my calendar to block it out three different times. So I really protected it, and I still blew it by 45 minutes. So either way, you're here. Welcome to the show.
You were teaching.
I'm teaching. And at first I saw you popping in and I was like, I'm on a roll and I don't mess this up. But actually I want to, because instead of what we were going to talk about, at least for now, we'll fly through the rest of this and I want to get your opinion on it. But for people watching this before we get into it, so who's joining me here is Mr. Rob House. I had him on my podcast when it was the Sales Experience Show podcast. Long time ago, in the first season, we connected on LinkedIn, as everyone does, and as I do with everybody. And, you know, we connected and stayed in touch, and he does a lot of amazing stuff. If you're watching this live right now, you can see the banner across the bottom, everything he does. Essentially, he's just trying to make a billion healthy people, right? Is that still the vision?
It's still the vision. I realize with math that billion can change quickly. So, you know,
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just do it, man. I think that's a great goal. So, you know, one of the things, if you don't know who Rob Howze is, Howze, make sure to follow him on LinkedIn. He's super active there. I'll pop up some websites later, all the different things he has going on. It's a laundry list of awesome stuff. But Rob, you're just a good dude who's doing great stuff that's positive. You are the yang to my yin. Am I the yin to your yang? I don't know which one is which. You're the type of guy that's just going to go on LinkedIn and do an ad lib spontaneous rap video where you're just rapping and singing and dancing, having fun. That is the opposite of me. And so I appreciate you and what you do. Uh-oh. Rob, are you there? Looks like Rob might have joined and then froze on us. So, all right. Well, let's see what happens with Rob. This is always fun with live TV.
Rob, are you there? Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Just froze for a second. Okay.
So I'm actually in here forcing quit on applications. I should be getting some bandwidth power coming soon here.
All right. So you were watching and you thought I was doing the pregame show waiting for Mr. Rob. And so I'm teaching, like you said. So I always have something on deck just in case, because it's live TV. Just never know what's going to happen, right?
Absolutely.
Internet, schedules, sickness, mm-hmm. Just got to always be ready. So anyway, going through my sales success fundamentals, we've talked about those before. In fact, we were just talking on your new podcast with you and the amazing Wilton Rogers. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're talking about this. I cover, you know, I call it Refu, which is a silly name. It makes no sense. It doesn't even flow. It doesn't come out of the mouth well, but I can't literally find a different set of letters to use. It's so perfect. The words, the words and the letters are just like spot on. You just can't change it. And the order is so important. I can't even spell something cooler with it. So the first one was rapport. Now let's talk about empathy. So with me, with empathy in the sales process, it's about asking questions, right? And when you ask questions, you show somebody that you care. What's your riff on building empathy early on in that conversation in a sales conversation?
Exactly what you just said. I mean, empathy is the cousin of understanding. You know, or called the brother, sister, you know, they're close, you know, and people, the more understanding you have, the closer the relationships become. Because if you think about it, if you don't understand someone, or if someone doesn't understand you, then you're not going to be that open to share with them. But if they do understand you and they show that, then you'll be open to share with them. But what does that really mean? It just means the relationship gets closer. And so we begin to start moving closer and becomes more intimate, the more empathetic. We call it empathetic listeners. It's a new term that we like to use. I said we. It's just me, myself, and I. But, you know.
all three of you. Hey, I love it. That's how movements start, right? Just it's me, myself, and I, and then, you know, see whoever else wants to get on.
Yeah.
And I love that. I've never heard of that, obviously, because you're just making things up on the fly, which I love, is the empathetic listening. Because for me, people, this is in the sales conversation, this would be discovery, right? This is the question asking phase. This is where people get hung up a lot in many different ways. And I'm not going to go into super detail here. You can definitely read the book if you want to get more detail. But the key is that discovery portion is doing a couple things. One is you're asking questions because you want to uncover the deepest level of truth that you can then hopefully solve if it's a good fit. And the listening is key, because a lot of times people ask questions just to ask questions and to check boxes or just to hear themselves talk. Mm-hmm. They're not asking questions and then listening to understand, listening to be empathetic, listening to actually because they care. Mm-hmm. They're just like, okay, just waiting for their chance to talk.
That's it. That's it. And that's that sounds like an argument, you know, basically. You know, you're arguing with somebody, they're talking, but the whole time they're talking, you're really just thinking about what you're going to say next.
But Rob, what about?
Yeah. And nothing happened besides a bunch of noise and energy lost. So we don't do that. Empathy is the way to connect the dots and bring people closer. But doing that, I mean, how? I mean, how do you get somebody to do this?
I mean, I think that's really the key. Like you said, it's the empathetic listening. And when you're listening, it means you're not talking, right? As my grandma used to say all the time, two ears, one mouth. If you just remember that in a sales conversation, in any conversation, in a conversation with a significant other or a friend or someone you just met at a coffee shop, if you listen twice as much as you talk, other people will think that you care a ton. even if you say very little. How do you do that? You have to ask questions because you got to get them talking.
Yeah.
And if you're not talking and they're talking and you're listening,
yeah,
it builds this level of empathy that's wild, absolutely wild.
Yeah, the relationship capital grows pretty fast.
Yeah, and then when you get somebody to talk, right, because you're caring, so you're asking and then you're listening, they're talking, they're going to share information. That's going to hopefully give you the breadcrumbs that will help you find how do you solve that, right? How do you do that? And so, and then the next part is trust, right? So what happens is you can't just say, I want to build trust with you. Hey, hey, Rob, you can trust me. It's okay. I'm a professional. You can trust me.
That's the quickest way for me not to trust you. Telling somebody to trust you is the quickest way for them not to trust you.
It's okay, Rob. You can trust me because I've worked with these companies before and they trusted me. So you can trust me. It's okay, Rob.
Right, right. That's the world we're living in. We're going to hit on that one, guys.
It's okay. You can trust me because I have a million followers. So it's okay. And sometimes that works, right? Social proof is important.
Sometimes.
Yeah. You need that capital, and I think that's key, right? And I'm not dismissing that, but the key for me to build the trust is to do those first two steps, right? So when you do rapport in a proper way where they get to know you and like you, right, like Bob Berg says, and then you do the empathy part with the questions and the empathetic listening and building that part where they feel like you care about them because you actually do, hopefully, they learn to trust you because you put those two things together, and they're like, wow, I like this person. I feel like they care. I feel like they want to help me. Feel like I can trust them.
These letters are lining up, man. I see how you were stuck with that word. And this is like, this is right in order. This is right in order.
Yeah, no, you can't. And then, and in this step, this is where you're also coming in intentionally with your monologues. And so for me, what I always joke about and call the monologue is what salespeople like to do in the very beginning, which is, hey, I know we just met. My name is Jason. Here's what I do. Here's my company. Here's all my social proof. Here's my testimonials. Here's how great I am. Here's my features and benefits. Here's everything from my brochure. There goes Rob on the video. He's fallen down into the pit of whatever because it's terrible, right? And that's what I don't know why, but that's like the standard. If I throw enough crap at you, you're going to want to buy from me, right?
Yeah. No, yeah. And what school was teaching that?
I don't know. I don't know. It's just a standard. And there's so many
school.
Different
standard school.
It's standard school. That's it. The same school that doesn't teach everybody anything about financial wisdom or emotions or relationships. All of those. That school. The one you need to build. That's the one you need to build. Cover all those things.
That's what I'm building too, but honestly,
I know you are.
What you just said, but you're right, man. Oh gosh, it's so that's why I like what you do, because you're helping people understand the importance. Not just do this because that should happen. This should, we hear it, but no, walking through this word, say the word, say the word again.
Refuse. It doesn't make any sense. But so, and this, speaking of that monologue and, kind of the elevate, not the extended elevator pitch or the social proof, to me, this is where it comes in, right? So you do the rapport, you do the empathy, which is the questions and the discovery, and then you get the trust, right? There's a foundation built and some fundamentals. And then here is where you start to talk about yourself. And when you do it right, you talk about yourself and your company in terms of what it is that they need, right? Not just my standard pitch about here's all the stuff that I do and all the jargon, but here's what we do and why it relates to you, right? And here's where, let me tell you a story about someone else like you that I helped last week that was in a similar situation, right? Because this is where you're doing that trust, not right out of the gate, which is where people like to do, right? The worst example of that is if you've ever gone to a trade show or a conference and you walk up to a booth and 5 minutes later, they're still talking about themselves and they haven't asked you a single question. You're just like, hey, this is a terrible fit. I don't want what you have. And you just wasted a ton of time.
Yeah. Mine and yours.
Yeah. Everybody's.
Everybody.
Yeah. So let's go to the next step. So the next step is hope, which I know you're all about the hope. And for me, it's
a hope dealer.
You're a hope dealer. And, and the hope is the key, right? Which is you have problem X. I've uncovered that. I've asked questions. We've gone on this journey together in this conversation. And then now I've figured out what it is that you need that I think I can solve. You have problem X. I have solution X. Oh, I have the hope. Here is the hope. Here's where we can go.
Yeah.
If this works out, and here's why it's going to be amazing for you, not for me, not because it says it in the brochure, not because this is what I think everyone wants. What do you think about that?
So what is the definition of hope?
For me, It's weird. No one's ever asked me that. I've never thought about it in specific terms. For me, the definition of hope that I would use is that I am here. And then hope is that there's something, there's a place, there's a time, there's a different thing, you know, person, place, or being, where that's where I would like to be. And that helps me with a goal, or that helps me get out of pain. And there's hope, there's something better. And again, it's not always just about more money. It's not always more this or that. It's just maybe a different thing, right? I want to be healthy. There's hope. I have hope because I can see that there's a way out of my current spot into a new spot.
And how do you build hope? So hope comes from the domino effect of what we've just already experienced. Is now now we're here, and now their hope can be realized because they the trust pushed them enough to where now now I see that what you have can really be the solution for what I need.
Yep, and the empathy step, right? The empathetic listening. That you said, the key is that I asked questions and I listened, and I know that you have problem X. And then I know that I have solution X for you specifically. And I'm going to tailor this hope conversation for you, right? Like if I was a personal trainer at a gym, right? I could tell everybody, hey, you're going to lose 50 pounds and blah, blah, blah. But the hope step has to be about you. Like, what is your fitness goals? What are your health goals? What are your challenges? How do I help you with your hope? Which is why you have to do those three steps first before that, because then it's tailored. If it's a one size fits all hope, it's not going to be effective at a larger scale.
Yeah. There's no one size fits all hope. Hope is custom made.
Custom made hope. That's what we deal with, brother. Right? It's all about custom hope for everybody. And then the last one here is the urgency. So this is the last part in the silly refuse word, which now people, you know, probably start to understand and learn the urgency. And so the urgency piece is that the time is always now, right? The goal, the time for everything is always now. Now, sometimes there's money issues, there are decision issues. There might be some actual barrier, but as a sales professional, when I go into it, the time is always now. And one of the stories and examples I use all the time is if, you know, you go in and your arm is broken and you go into the ER and the doctor goes through their process and x-rays it and diagnoses it and then gives you the prescription and says, your arm is broken. Here's the fracture. We need to fix it. I'll send you a follow-up email and let's, maybe get together next week. I'll see if this is something you want to do. If you have any questions, just let me know. And here's a brochure in my card and, just let me know. Right. You wouldn't do that. That would be terrible. You'd be like, no, that's why I'm here. I'm here because I have a problem. Instead, the doctor says, okay, we're going to do this now because you need it now. Any questions? Okay, hold on. This is going to hurt, but then you're going to be better. But you can't do that without the other four steps, right? So if you don't build the other four steps first, your urgency sounds like a high pressure, pushy salesperson.
Who just wants you to buy now. The sleazy sales guy. Sleazy, the one that's just, hey, all right, come on. You got 30 seconds to get this or the deal is over,
I have somebody else coming in an hour. If you don't want to buy this car now, I know they're going to buy it. So, right. Like that kind of tactic is what people dislike and think that sales is about. And I feel you can be super urgent, which is, hey, Rob, I know you have this problem. I know I have the solution based on what you said this was important to you. I think the best thing is for us to get started on this right now, right? Not for me, not 7 billion people on the planet. I know I can help other people, but I want to help you. And we both agree that you need this right now, right? Whether it's getting out of pain or it's accomplishing a goal. And then that shifts this urgency from a desperate salesperson who's trying to make my numbers to, I just want to help you. And I'm coming from a place of abundance. And I know if I don't help you, I don't know what's going to happen to you.
Right. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. So that was the quick abbreviated lesson. So now there's a whole bunch of questions or comments that came in. So here's Richard Brooke. For most people, hope is laced with resignation. They hope something will get better, but they don't believe it actually will. Hope, unfortunately, is not optimism, but a hopeful resignation. You can hear it in their language. I hope I will versus I will. And I completely agree with that. You give me your thoughts here in a second, Rob, but I completely agree with Richard on this because when you know, when people talk about that in the language they're using, I hope I could make more. I hope 2021 is going to be a better year, right? I hope I can finish the year strong. I hope I can get in good shape next year, right? And it's like, yeah, that's just filled with, yeah, I'll try, right? You might as well say I'll try. I'll try to get in good shape next year. It's like, you know, like Yoda says, right? There's no try.
There is no try.
Yeah, and so I think that's important from a standpoint for them. In this context, and what we're talking about in a sales process is giving them the hope, not saying, hey, I hope you're going to do this, but it's like, here's the hope of what it looks like. Here's the here's what it feels like. When you have this, it will feel like this and your life will be like this. Okay, now hold on. We're going to go.
That's it. That's it. Yeah, and I was going to say the same thing. You know, different context. On this side, yeah, we want to paint the picture of hope for them, and that happens. But on the other side, you're right. Hope is necessary, though. Because hope is helps you to recognize what you desire, and then you have to take the action. Somebody said hope was like walking through the fire and faith was leaping over it. I heard someone say that. But it's like, you know, it's a different kind of thing. You know, you need hope to, you know, to see what you believe, but then you gotta really take action. It really comes down to, you know, taking action on what it is that the desire that was in you. And a lot of people get stuck on it, you know, so we help them.
And I think the key is, and this is where, and I use the order taker term a lot, right? You know that, is I think this is where order takers stop a lot is they build the hope. They get somebody on the hope step and then they're hoping the other person, the customer, the prospective customer then says, you're right. This sounds great. I want some of what you're selling. Right. Here's my money. Right. And so they're the salesperson's strategy is hope. And then they're leaving off at this hope step, hoping, you know, if I painted this nice picture, somebody wants it. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, the thing is, if you keep in mind, if somebody really wanted whatever it is that you're selling, they would have already gotten it or done it, or they could would have called you and said, hey, by the way, you sell this.
Yeah.
I want it. How much how much does this cost? Right. If they have to talk to you through a process and you have to help them decide, keep in mind, they're just going to put their head back in the sand if you're not careful, which is what Richard's talking about here.
Right? Yeah, for sure. For sure. That's a good point, Richard.
Yeah. So so that's refu. It's super important. One last thing, and I kind of put it up on the screen there for anyone that saw it, but the order is important. Again, if you do that out of order and you do the urgency early, it sounds desperate and cheesy. If you do the hope too early before you even know their situation, it sounds like one size fits all, and it just doesn't work. It's it's just not successful. If you say, hey, my name is Jason. Don't worry, you can trust me because I've been doing this for a long time. Like you said, man, red flags. I don't trust you instantly.
Yeah,
instantly. So, so let's. Since you're here, we got about 12 minutes, 13 minutes left. Now that we went through the education portion of this week, let's talk about your stuff. Let's talk about what you have going on. So, there's some topics that we were going to discuss here, and we'll fly through some of them. I think here's what I think is fascinating about you for people who don't know you. First one is you're the number one Rob Howes on Google. So if anyone wants to find you, H-O-W-Z-E, he's the number one Rob Howes. Fun fact, as he waves to the fans, fun fact, I had you on my podcast a year and a half ago. I don't have the exact date. Had you on. That's literally when it came to the end. How do people find you? You're like, it's super easy. Google, number one Rob Howes. And I was like, interesting. Where am I? I Googled it. I'm like the number maybe six Jason Cutter on Google at the time. And I'm like, dang, I'm not even number one Jason Cutter. That's messed up. I will tell you, I dominate the first two or three pages now of Jason Cutter over the last year and a half. Like, there's so much content. Like, no other Jason Cutters can compete right now. Anyway, it's an interesting self-promotional fun fact there, which I just think is funny in this day and age. And so here's the thing. Your wellness, health, you have things like Camp Fit. You're focused on worldwide community. And then there's this other side of you, which is fascinating, right? Outside of the music and the dancing and the fitness and the health and the mental health and the billion healthy people, scale through automation, RPA, robotic process automation, and helping companies streamline their processes through AI and technology.
Yeah, it's a very, very beautiful world, man.
how does that come about? Like, how do you see that fitting in with each other? I mean, one of the things we're going to talk about is, you know, those challenges that, you know, automation solves, where that fits in. Where do you see that intersection of these two worlds for you?
Well, here's the thing, man. Like, every single industry needs technology. They're using it now, and they're going to need it more. And they're going to need advanced technology, in essence, when it comes to communication and effectiveness and processes and being able to not just compete but sustain them on their own selves. They're going to have to implement technology. People can no longer just waste and spend their time doing monotonous, repetitive, mundane tasks. They can't do that. It's not for their well-being and just for the company. When your people are doing robotic behavior, you have a robot do it so that that person can then go reallocate their time and energy to something more effective, add more value, become a better person inside because they're not locked. And so every industry, to some extent, is implementing this technology, and it's going to be. And if you do your research on how fast, we'll call it RPA, robotic process automation, Google how fast it's growing. Like right now, about close to 2% of the market is actually using it, middle and lower. It's going to quadruple, tentuple, sextillion, septillion. I mean, it's so interesting because I'm watching numbers, and every time the number changes and just increases because they get more data. The point is, every industry is going to have technology that's going to allow them to be more effective. And 2020 has shown us how 2020 has accelerated, actually, the pace at which this was going to have to happen. You know, and for example, you know, you got some companies that have literally fallen apart just because, you know, they don't have the people to be able to man the hours that are necessary. You know, and some companies that we're working with that have suffered from this found a way to leverage the technology and get those tasks done. Then the people that are working with them, working remotely, can focus on things that they were never even focused on before. It's adding more value to the company. Here's the challenge. People are scared, man. People are scared. Like, this is a very scary time. And if you don't know what something is, fear is going to keep you from investigating. And fear is going to allow you to hear all the negative sides of it. And then you're going to miss it. What I'm telling people is, as a humologist, ladies and gentlemen, what that is humans and technology create humology. I'm a humologist, which is I'm leading this because I care about making sure people understand it. I look at myself and Wilton like, you know, we're the bridge. You got a bunch of robots on this side. We got humanity on this side. And we're the bridge to help people connect it. Whether it's the robot that shows you how to use your phone the most effective way or how to implement something within inside of your system and get business processes flowing like water, whatever it may be. Point is, we got to heighten our understanding. We got to heighten our understanding. However you can do that, you got to gain more understanding. Whether it's Google State College, whether it's YouTube University, or whether you come to our STA community and basically take a bunch of courses for free, get yourself understood in all the different industries. Whatever you do, do it. Don't sit on the sideline. It's not one of those kind of games.
And I think that's great. I mean, because here's one of the things, right, is that most people are afraid of automation. Most people fear, you know, and not in a Terminator, Skynet, the robots are going to take over kind of a thing, but in a, you know, they're going to lose their job and where's their value? And if, you know, and what I always say is that if a robot or automation can do your job as well as you can, you should be really worried. You should be concerned for what it is that you do. Mm-hmm. And when it's done right, which is what I love that you started with, if people didn't catch this, it's super important, which is when a company, a business, even an individual, right? Like I put in some of these things in place for me. When you have this technology, when you have the RPA, the robotic process automation, where there's something that happens and instead of you doing this manual task of moving this to here, something else does it for mm-hmm. you. It literally frees people up and mm-hmm. allows people watching this, listening to this, allows you to do better things with what you could be doing with your mind, right? Yeah. Like creating more, doing more instead of the robotic kind of like, you know, I'm going to say menial because sometimes it's menial down. I'm copying and I'm pasting. I'm copying and I'm right. pasting. I'm copying right. and I'm pasting, right? Instead of that, have something do that. It's like, okay, I'm freed up physically and mentally. Mm-hmm. Now what can I do?
Now
what can I? And for companies that get that, they go, I want all the value I can get out of this person and what they want to do. And what's fascinating is that when you remove those menial tasks, those repetitive tasks, if you will, and free somebody up from that, they're usually happier because now they're doing something more, right? They're creating more. They're focused on more. They're creating something different instead of just like, oh my gosh, another Monday where I'm moving this over to here. Mm-hmm. And so I'm doing other things. And Richard Brook jumped in, you know, humanologist. He loves it. He says, you're a smart guy. I completely agree. And then my friend Stephanie Roberts, who I've known for a long time via Facebook. Looks like she jumped in here. Good stuff. Thanks for joining. So.
Thanks, Richard.
Where do you see that coming? Actually, let's talk about this. So what's the best way for companies, you know, to know what technology they should be implementing? How do they start that process and do it responsibly?
You know, the first thing to do is to really take a look at what they're doing. Like, what is the actual process? You know, taking a look at, and you want to find out where time is being spent. And so, and we have a questionnaire that we send to companies and they fill out this questionnaire. It's not very long, but it's enough to where you put enough details in there specifically to where not only are you unpacking what the problem is by unraveling the process, but you're helping us to understand where everything is. And essentially, all you want to do is start looking at processes from end to end and looking at what it takes. How much time? And anytime you do that, you can go in and 60 to 70, 80% of that can be automated anytime you look at the process. And so step number one, look at your process from end to end and look at what is repetitive. And anywhere you find activity that has to put in applications, documents, spreadsheets, copy and paste, you know, QuickBooks type of activity, all of that. I mean, anything that's happening over and over, note it. Because that, ladies and gentlemen, can be automated. And like Jason said, the moment you should see people's faces light up that, you know, the people who were actually having to do this, when they find out, when we're on the Zoom with them and they find out that this is taken away, they literally say, so you're saying I don't have to do that anymore? It's almost like Christmas, you know? Mama, I don't have to do it anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's so exciting. And so, and that's, why not? Who wants to do the same crap every day? Nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody. You may have told yourself that I like doing this because that's all you've been, you don't like it. You don't want to do the same thing because there's greater things within you to do. Yeah. You just don't know.
Inside everybody, and obviously doing those that repetitive task, you know, isn't going to get you there, and isn't going to lead to a satisfied, you know, career or life. I mean, I feel like everyone has potential to do more. You know, people limit themselves. Not everyone is going to be an Elon Musk and send people, you know, into space, and that's okay. Like,
Mars,
but everybody has this
Mars
thing
by 2026. By the way, Mars, he's talking here.
Okay, yeah, or Mars, right? And so. You know, and I think the key too with the automation and doing this and using technology, it's what's repetitive and then also what has the possibility of mistakes. Mm-hmm. And so some of it is just, you know, keeping, you know, that task from somebody having to do it all the time. Another one is if it's something that somebody's doing and it's prone to the possibility of a mistake, when you automate it, then you remove that piece and mm-hmm. now you have kind of a flawless execution that is also freeing somebody up, right? And then you have two wins.
You basically take the people off the monotonous task, you heighten the efficiency, which ultimately increases your ROI. Your return on investment is growing.
And Stephanie then replied with another one, all for tapping into and developing our human skills and allowing bots to take over mindless work. That's true job security. I mean, when you put yourself into something where you're using your mind and your talents and skills, whatever that might be, everyone's got this talent and skill and experience kind of intersection that they're bringing to the table. Mm-hmm. And then when you're using that, then you're actually not replaceable because then you're bringing your human special superpowers to the table, whatever that is. Your superpower could be, you know, could be, I don't know, making coffee or, you know, helping people around the office. Like it doesn't have to be just what people think high level.
Yep. Absolutely. Being human is unmatched.
Yeah. You can't. It's it. So let's talk about. Okay. So about this one here. So this is one topic. What's the number one skill a business leader should have? This may or may not be automated related. This might be your human side of humanologist. Yeah,
mine's human, man. It's humanity first. It's empathy. You know, empathy is the driver. Empathy and integrity is important. You know, they kind of go together. But empathy, when we were talking about that empathetic listener, empathy means you are intentionally trying to understand the other person. There's so much power in business and in relationships. When I started doing intentional empathy with my wife, relationship changed, ladies and gentlemen. It went from dark to light, snow to sunny. It went to the cold to the beach. And it was so great. Because I decided to begin listening. And so in business, when you have empathy as a leader, you help people draw closer. Again, they feel like you understand them. When people feel understood, they work at their highest level. When people feel understood and loved, dude, they freaking will go in. But if they're coming in like, you know, afraid you're going to chop their head off today, they're just going to do whatever they got to do to get to the water cooler. I said water cooler. What is that? So, you know, it's super important, man. Empathy and integrity. And I'll tell you, integrity is important. It got to come with it because I've met people who they show up one way and then it's like what? Like I meet them and they're like, and then before long, like what just happened? So you know what happens? People are not, they're not the same person in the light as they are in the dark. And so people need to work on that. Work on being true to yourself. Because that integrity is going to allow the relationships to last longer. And empathy is going to allow people to know that you love and care about them. So now you enrich those relationships. So don't burn the bridge down. Matter of fact, paint it with empathy.
Yeah. And I think that's so important. Obviously, you know, that transparency, that consistency, all of that fits into, you know, other words you can use along with the authenticity. And I see that a lot where people in organizations literally focus. They have their work persona. They think they've got to have this work person, and then they have their other person, and they have their leadership mode, right? Like I put on my leadership mask and I put on my leadership suit, and then I'm a leader and here's what I do. And then outside of that, like I'm a completely different person. You know, and I think I understand kind of why that happens. I don't think it's effective. I think it's hard to maintain. I think people can sense it. Even if they can't identify what seems off about that person, that leader, that individual, even that coworker, you might not always be able to put your finger on it, but you can sense it. There's something that feels off. Like dogs, like, you know, animals can sense fear. You can tell when someone's not being real.
True.
And it's not in alignment with, you know, whatever they're saying and doing isn't matched. You can always tell. And I think that's huge. And I think, you know, people need that. And I think for some reason, and I see this a lot, especially with new leaders, somebody, let's say they're in sales and then they get promoted to manager or, you know, director of sales. And they feel like, okay, now I've got to be this, you know, director, leader, manager person. I've got to run things a certain way. And that's, you know, what I think leadership means.
That's what I think it is. Study leadership, ladies and gentlemen. Study it. And then look at the leaders you like, and success leaves clues. So follow the trail, you know, continue to keep growing yourself. Just do that. Just keep growing. You'll get there.
And like you said, if you're empathetic and then you're consistent and what was the word you used?
Integrity or empathy?
Integrity. Yep. Integrity. So if you combine the empathy with the integrity, which means you're transparent, you're authentic. I recently interviewed a guy from my show, Steve Sims, and he doesn't like authentic. He likes transparent, which I like, which is you, what you see is what you get, right? You meet him, you like him or not, but that's right. Who he is.
I like that.
And you just know who he is, like right? That. And so you interchange these terms. And I think that's key. If you're not sure what to do as a leader, I would say do three things: is have integrity or be transparent and authentic, right? In that bucket, empathy, which is where you care about other people and you want people to be in a better situation, right? Mm-hmm. Not sympathy, which Richard Brooke threw on here, and he's a big one on authenticity. So he and I chatted recently. He's going to come on my podcast, but he's got a book and a course and all these things about authentic networking, which I think is a topic we all love. Wow. I know that you're all about it, so that should be a fun conversation. Yeah. But he says here in the chat, empathy is huge, not sympathy, which is, oh, poor you. I'm going to come down to your level and we're going to be sad together or angry together. Right. Empathy is, I'm sorry that you feel this way, or I understand and I feel it and I care about you, so let me help you elevate, right? Yes. So it's about, let me be there for you in a different way.
Right.
Yeah. So I think if you combine those two things, and then also servant leadership, which is my goal as a leader is to serve you, the people yeah. underneath me, have a mission and a vision, and then pull you with me. Like, you're going to want to come along, and I'm here to serve you. Mm-hmm. And if I'm serving you, then you're going to want to be on this mission with me. If you yep. do those three things, that's really it.
You're good. You're really on your way.
That's it. You're set.
Yeah.
You're set. All right. So I guess we should wrap this up. I feel like we could just keep going. Anything else you want to add? I mean, you know, we're over the time, but it doesn't matter. It's my show. I can do whatever I want.
I know. It's tell the network they can wait. You know what I mean? We're in this new age, man. You know, we got this power in our hands. It's still NBC, ABC, CBS. Well, that's LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube now, right? You know.
Yeah. Well, and if you really think about what's fascinating, and I know if anyone listens to Gary Vee, he says this all the time, but if you look at, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, you wanted to have a show, you wanted to have people watching it, this big studio production, you had to have a big budget, somebody had to fund it, or you were on public access yeah. television late at night. I remember those days you watch somebody's like local thing and they're like in the public access, you know, public network studio, and it's just terrible. It looks terrible, but you know, that was the yeah. only other option you had.
That's all you
right.
had.
And then here's this. Two people just chatting on LinkedIn and interacting with people all over the world. I mean,
yeah, man.
Yeah, it's all.
This has been, LinkedIn has been the greatest, you know, honestly, the greatest thing that's happened to my social relationships and things of that nature, dude, like business, personal, over the last 2 years, 3 years. I mean, everybody I know. Business, relations. The reason I'm saying that is because people need to utilize this platform. I mean, LinkedIn is a place that you really can come. If you come with some value, you can get into a community very quickly, and there'll be people who want to communicate with you. They're going to be wanting to. And the percentage, here's another thing. I'm just throwing this out here. You know, LinkedIn is growing so wide. You get so much love with the algorithm right now. That's better than probably that in TikTok. You get the most love if you put a post up. But here's the thing with LinkedIn. I'm not sure how many users are now. There's well over, you know, 650,000, I'm sure now.
Is it 650 million, yeah.
Thank you. And out of the active users, 1%. Now, this is like 3 months ago, 4 months ago, is producing content. Maybe it's up to 2 now. Maybe it's grown to 2. I don't understand that. Why am I saying that? That means like it's all these people, only 2% are creating content, and then like a fraction of that is making video content. So it's literally an audience that's out there is like, hey, I want to see something. It's unbelievable, man. Like you would never have thought this opportunity would be here.
Well, and I'll tell you from my side, when I create content and, you know, one of the things you and I did together, if anyone didn't see it or hasn't been following me or connected with me a long time, is I was a part of one of your 30-day LinkedIn video challenges where make a video for 30 days straight, get in that habit, kind of break through some barriers. I don't enjoy doing video. People think I do, but I still don't. I don't like it. I don't know why. I just, you know, I'm more of an audio written. I can just bang out. You know, I can knock out, you know, 3,000-4,000 words a day if I write, but uh-huh. video, it's not my thing. But what's interesting is going through that process and doing those videos and then all of the content. One of the things that fascinates me, which I love, is maybe low engagement, maybe not a lot of interactions with stuff, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then always, every once in a while, something out of the blue, someone will say, hey, by the way, I've been watching your videos. I've been looking at your content. I've been listening to your podcast. I love your posts. Hey, you know, can you help me with X, Y, and Z, right? Just lurkers out of nowhere coming out. And it's like, but that's just what you got to do. You just got to share as much as you can because you never know where it's going to go.
Never know, man. You never know. Yeah. 660 million users.
Yeah, it's awesome.
200 countries, man. Like, I mean, yeah. what are you going to do here? What do you have to say? You know, what do yeah. you have to say? I need you to say it. I need you to say it. I need you to sharpen your tools. Get this book, Jason. I mean, basically follow this guy's content. I'm telling you, because one of the things that is the hardest thing to do is you can have a great product or service, but you just don't know how to correlate that yourself with that, you know, authentically. You just don't know how not to be unauthentic because you just, for whatever reason, there's the yeah. thing. Like, even if what you have is so true and wholesome, when you're selling it, you look not like that, you know? So it's like, it's important, man. It's important. So I'm putting the plug out for you, you know, because, you know, it's important that people build that skill, man. It's really helpful.
I appreciate that. And the only caveats I would say, you said put that message out there on LinkedIn, unless it's cryptocurrency or telling me that I need more leads for LinkedIn. Those two things. Yeah, I think that's about it. So, all right. So people can find you, Rob House. For anyone listening to this, if you're not watching this, it's H-O-W-Z-E. So you can find him on there. And then I have a few of your websites. So robhousespeaks.com, which is the company one, campfit.global is the personal one. SBCEO.com is another one. Any other ones in there to throw in?
Well, actually, you know, all those are out. So, you know, so those are fine. But the main one right now is scalethroughautomation.com. You know, that's the main one.
Love it. Yeah, scalethroughautomation.com. Yeah. And then there's this one here. That's what you sent over. Two of us rocking the podcast, Mike. I love it. Rob, thanks for joining. Thanks for coming in even late. It was perfect because we got a little education stuff out of the way on my side. And then we had a fantastic talk. And I appreciate your input about my weird refuge format.
I like the language, Foundation.
Man. So thanks for joining. And, you know, keep it up, man. I love what you do. So inspirational. And I'm glad to have become friends with you on LinkedIn and then outside of LinkedIn and interacted and, you know, built this kind of relationship, which is fun, and having not met in person.
Right.
So thanks. Great. Thanks for being here. And thanks for sharing.
Hey, man. Appreciate you, brother.
Yeah. And then for everyone else, you can check out the book, AuthenticPersuasion.com. It's available there. I also have my coaching program, which is Vox with Jason. Rob took off. And that's it for this broadcast. I will catch you on the next episode and conversation about authentic persuasion. Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.